Welcome back to another edition of Behind the Headlines from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell, and if I sound a little bit different today, it's because I'm not in the studio at the moment. Instead, I'm in Madison, Wisconsin, where I just spoke at an event about podcasting. Today's show will be an unusually short one since I left the office early to attend the event with the Society of Professional Journalists. I hope you enjoy it nevertheless. We'll start today's show with the hard and difficult news segment. The photo of a Wisconsin student wearing a KKK costume during a class presentation at Westosha Central High School made headlines worldwide in April. Many people expressed shock that a student would wear such a racially charged, and some would argue, inflammatory costume. But for two families, it was not shocking at all. In fact, it only reinforced a climate they had experienced firsthand. Journal Sentinel education reporter Anisha Johnson interviewed two students and their mothers who have experienced racial bullying at their rural Wisconsin schools. Anisha talks with Chelsea Lewis about those families and her upcoming story.
Let's start with the Simmons family. Can you tell me a little bit about them?
This is a family, a widow. Her husband died of cancer. He was an attorney. She's white. Her husband was African-American. She moved her kids from Racine to this rural Kenosha County school, thinking that she was going to give them a better opportunity. And what they confronted when they got there was nothing that she expected. Her children have been called racial slurs, repeatedly bullied on social media and in person. One daughter, the older daughter, actually had to leave. She couldn't take it anymore. She left to go to Gateway to finish her senior year. But the younger daughter is really trying to take a positive approach to this. Her solution is, we're going to pray them out of this, mom. We're going to love them out of this, mom. Their view is that kids, If they just have the information, they can change.
And what about the Hutchison family?
This is another family that also moved there. They moved to Lake Geneva, and this is a mom who moved her four children there. She's white. Their father was African-American. He's dead. She moved them there for a job. She's already been promoted. They like her at her work, but her kids, at least two of her kids, have just been really severely bullied at school. The boy was, according to the interview, slapped in the face and called names in the locker room, taunted by kids at school. I won't repeat all the terms that they've used for this kid. He's now out of school and going to finish up the rest of the year at home, probably online. But and her daughter, who's younger than him, she said she came there as this happy, you know, just joyful kid, and now she's just a different person.
So what are these two schools doing to address this, if anything?
Well, the schools say that they've addressed every issue that they knew about. Families say that their solutions have been inadequate. In the Hutchison family case, their solution, according to the mother, has been to take Caleb out of classes, separate Caleb. They say that none of the bullies have been disciplined as a result of this. In the Simmons case, one child was expelled from school, but the mother maintains that he was expelled for disrespecting an administrator during the process, not for, as she said, calling my daughter a racial slur.
So even if the school has said, the schools have said they've addressed the individual incidents, is either school doing anything larger to address racism as a larger issue?
I didn't get that impression from the Lake Geneva school. The principal at Westosha Central said that they would be ramping up their sensitivity training for both staff and students as a result, not of what these folks have experienced. This has been going on the entire school year for these families. But you may recall that what brought this to our attention was a student at Westosha had donned a Klan suit for a presentation that went viral, and now the school is addressing it.
Since these schools have said they've started addressing these issues, have things gotten better for these kids at all?
Well, I'll talk about Micah, who is at Westosha. What made things better for her was she had been taunted on social media by an older class person who said she was going to beat her up. They met in the hall. This was a student she did not know. They met in the hall accidentally. She says the girl pushed her and she fought back. She takes mixed martial arts, so it sounds like she got the better of the girl. Both girls got ticketed and suspended, I think, for a day. But it's really the fight that changed things for her, she says. After that, she was contacted by a lot of kids on social media saying, thank you for dealing with this bully. So things had gotten better for her, but they continue. A day or 2 days after the Klan incident, she looked down at her desk, and the N-word was etched into a desk at her school. Things for Caleb have actually gotten worse. There, at the end of last month, there was an exchange in the hallway with a principal. It did not go well, and he is now going to finish up the year probably at home. His mother wants to take him to a different school, but she is a single parent. She works long hours. The transportation costs to that other school are onerous for her, so she can't really afford it. But he will probably finish up the year in online classes.
So where does the story go from here? Are you continuing to report on this? Are there other things you're following up on?
Well, we'd like to see how extensive this is. This is two families that we learned about because of the Klan suit incident. We would like to know how pervasive this is in rural schools in Wisconsin, and we'd like to know what the state is doing about it. The state Department of Public Instruction did say to me today, as schools become increasingly integrated, we are trying to help districts understand what their role is in helping minority students. I'd like to know what that looks like.
Read Anissa's story at jsonline.com. What would you do if you found out you only had 2 years to live? Go skydiving? Travel around the world? How about write 80 cards for your 4-year-old daughter so she would never have to face a birthday or major life event without her mother? That's what West Allis native Heather McManany did. Heather passed away in December. She trusted her husband Jeff to pass the cards along to their daughter Brianna when the time was right. Since Heather died, Brianna has received cards for Valentine's Day and her 5th birthday. Heather also included some of the cards in her book, Cards for Brianna, A Mom's Messages of Living, Laughing, and Loving as Time is Running Out. Journal Sentinel Books editor Jim Higgins sat down with Chelsea Lewis to talk about the book and Heather's life.
So Jim, this was a pretty emotional story. I'll admit that I got only a couple paragraphs in and I teared up a little bit. What was it like for you reading this book and then reporting this story?
Well, it was a very emotional story for me, too. When I started reading the book, before I even knew I would write this story, I mainly was reading it because of somebody from Wisconsin. And I try to look at books by people from our area. And the more I got into it, I just felt, wow, what a vital person. You know, the tremendous unfairness of cancer. She was the kind of woman, I'm sure that many people thought she was their best friend just because she was so energetic and vital and passionate. And, you know, she really did seize the day. You know, she really did try to live as hard and fully as she can every moment. And that doesn't mean always doing dramatic things, but just being fully present to every day. And as her husband said, you know, when she was sad, she was sad. But she also went on to the next thing. And so, yeah, it was emotional. And part of the challenge of reading and writing a story like this is you know how it's going to end, you know. And so that makes those final moments very sweet. And along the way. So
yeah, yeah, definitely. So you interviewed Heather's husband, Jeff, for this story.
I talked to Jeff earlier in the week. He lives in McFarland outside Madison, and he's a very low-key, quiet, soft-spoken, straightforward guy. But that's the thing you get with both Jeff and Heather, very straightforward. And he says, you know, he says that Brianna, their daughter, who's five now, is doing well. He says in some ways she's more resilient than he is. But he said, yeah, once you've gotten the news that you have terminal cancer, there's no need to sugarcoat anything anymore. Just be as direct as possible. And that's the advice that he gives to other people in this spot. But he said the book captures, you know, his wife. This is really what she was like. So.
Were there any particular cards in the book or stories from the book that really stuck in your mind?
Sure. I just love the Motley Crue story. One of the great things about Heather's life and Heather's story is that she's not a stereotypical saint. You know, she's a woman who had big tattoos and got some more big tattoos during treatment. And then during one of the really bad news days on diagnoses, she went and, like, rode a mechanical bull somewhere. And she said, I didn't stop to think about whether, you know, my damaged spine with the radiation, whether that would be a good idea or not. But, you know, she kind of did her own thing with energy. And so she's a big Motley Crue fan. I'd seen them many times. A foundation that gives tickets to people who are critically ill had arranged some tickets for her to see the last Motley Crue show in Milwaukee. And Heather had just come off several weeks of really horrible chemo. And she's very specific in here about the different kinds of drugs and which ones make you feel even worse. And it had reached a point where they had met with the hospice people just to do some planning. And she kind of wavered back and forth. Do I go to the concert? Do I not? Do I feel well enough to go? And she asked her oncologist. And the oncologist, to his credit, said, go. There are hospitals in Milwaukee if anything happens. So she went, you know, in her purple wig and her black T-shirt that says, I'm not dead yet. And met the band backstage, and Nikki Sixx, who's one of the members of Motley Crue, just kind of took her by the shoulder and said, in so many words, we're going to rock your world tonight, so be prepared to have a great time. You know, that's making me tear up, that story. So.
That's an awesome story. So what was kind of your final takeaway, either from the story or from the book itself?
Well, other than the incredible fragility of life and the unfairness of cancer, and the older you get, you know, the more it just is everywhere. A couple things. One is Heather's very forthright on the whole pink ribbon thing, you know, that she doesn't want to totally disown the awareness movement, but she does make the point that, you know, people are kind of aware that there's breast cancer by now, that more needs to be done for curing cancer. And the people who have terminal cancer, the Metzgers, as she calls it, for people with metastasized cancer, don't shove them in a corner. You know, don't put them in a corner. And, you know, they're a part of the world, too. And she kind of railed some against the tendency to push anyone whose illness had left the optimistic stage in a corner. You know, taking each day as it comes also means, you know, taking the reality of where your health is. So her story is very inspirational in that way. And certainly anyone who's in a very serious spot with their cancer diagnosis, I'd recommend this book. So.
Read Jim's story in Sunday's Journal Sentinel and at tapmilwaukee.com. Donald Trump hasn't been a popular candidate within his own party. Many Republican leaders are saying they'd rather skip voting or vote for Hillary Clinton than vote for Trump. How does Scott Walker feel about the presumptive presidential candidate? Well, reporters Mary Spacuzza and Patrick Marley weighed in.
Yeah, so he had an appearance yesterday in West Allis, and I don't think I've ever seen him look so dejected other than when he got out of the presidential race on September 21st. He was very subdued and basically said that when asked why he was backing Trump, it was basically all about how bad Hillary is. Didn't hear a lot of praise for Trump himself, but basically, like, he's our nominee. He went back to that. He had pledged to support the Republican nominee back during the first Republican debate while he was still running. He obviously, in the months that followed that, consistently hedged and tried to not say he was going to be backing Trump, but went back to August 6th, I think was the debate, and said, I pledge to support the nominee. I'm going to support the nominee.
Yeah, well, Patrick, what was your sense? I know you've been talking to some of the other Republican leaders and folks around the state. I mean, there some are getting on the Trump train and some aren't. And you know, what's happening is that people are responding to this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's sort of all over the map. You know, one thing that's interesting is, for instance, the state Republican Party didn't put out a statement yesterday. Typically, when their candidate would be known, they would put something out and champion that person, talk about how they were going to win in the fall. Radio silence from them. We heard, you know, everything from people like Jim Steinke, the Assembly Majority Leader, who has been a never-Trump guy, still very skeptical of Trump, but not saying absolutely no way, just saying never Hillary, but leaving open, at least opening the door just a little bit that could support Trump. And then Senator Fitzgerald, the leader of the state senators, saying that he's on the Trump train.
Yeah, well, think about the dynamics here of this election, because you're going to have, assuming Hillary hasn't quite put Bernie Sanders away, but that's where it's certainly headed, but two very, you know, unpopular people with high negatives, and say neither one won the primary here. But what does that do for the idea that, you know, you want to be able to, it's better to have people who want to vote for somebody than who wants to vote more against somebody? Mary, what do you think?
You know, I think that obviously Trump didn't win Wisconsin. Hillary didn't win Wisconsin. However, you know, there are certain people who are, you know, feeling the burn, who say, I'm never voting for Hillary. And there are some people who said they'd never vote for Trump. However, I think given the choice, some of the Bernie supporters, if that goes that way, will come around to Hillary versus Trump. And I think that some of the Cruz supporters or the previous Walker supporters are so dead set against Hillary that they will come around. You know, maybe some will sit it out like they say they're going to. Maybe I've talked to diehard Republicans who say they are considering voting for Hillary. I will, you know, believe it when I see it. But I just don't know. Maybe it'll drive down turnout.
For more of our political coverage, swing by jsonline.com/politics. You can also find our full JS on Politics show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And that does it for today's show. But before I go, I'd like to say Happy Mother's Day to all of the moms listening today. Thank you for all you do. Spoil yourself a bit today and tune in next week for more behind-the-scenes information from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.